Welcome to the Evolution of Leaders podcast. My name is Darwin Lee, and I'm a coach and speaker. I'm the founder of the Evolution of Leaders. On this podcast, I'm interested in exploring the traits, habits, or behaviors that set apart elite performers through their stories and in their own words. On this episode, I interview world record-holding team member Marianne Tai. She's one of the leaders on a dragon boat team that set a world record. Now, today, she's a top athlete, but it's humbling to see the adversities she's been through, from being benched, being one of the slowest to try out, and getting cut. But she used each to get better. It's a great example of the synergy that you get when you combine great coaching with being coachable. My favorite part is when I asked her about the world record-setting race. You can see the passion in her body language, you can hear it in her voice, and you can feel that she's reliving it. Enjoy. Hello, everyone. This is Darwin with the Evolution of Leader Show, where I help people and teams grow and improve. My hope after listening to this podcast is that you will learn something about perseverance. And today's guest is Marianne Tai, who was a 9-time gold medalist, world champion, and world record holder in the sport of dragon boat with Team Canada, and now is also an executive with the team. She's also medaled numerous times at the Club Crew Championships multiple times. Marianne, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for coming on the show. We're excited to talk to you here.
Absolutely. It was really nice to actually be reached out and to hear that you're doing this podcast, so I'm super excited to be part of it.
That's good. That's good. And so can you give us kind of a 1-minute intro just about yourself and what you're about and what Dragon Boat has been like for you?
So my name is Marianne, as introduced. I am a part of the True North Paddling Club here in Toronto. I am part of the True North Premier Women as well as Hammerheads. And I've been with those teams since 2007, 2008. I've been on the national team for this is my third cycle already, and also been a pre-select with them twice. The sport of dragon boat has honestly been a very life-changing sport for me. I started dragon boating only when I was in 2004 as a rec paddler who's never been to the gym and only joined it because, you know, my ex-boyfriend did it, and it was a really good time with a lot of good people, so you could eat at regattas. So from there to this has been quite the journey, and it's honestly one of the best sports I say around, and also has taught me a lot of life lessons and helped me along with my career. So dragon boat means a lot to me. It's my lifestyle. It's who I am a lot of times, but it's definitely been a sport that I definitely would recommend to everybody out there.
And so you have a very interesting history with lots of challenges and triumphs. Mm-hmm. And in 2010, there were some interesting developments in your paddling career with your club team and with the changes that you went through. Can you take us through what that was like going back, I guess, a decade ago, believe it or not?
Don't tell people how old I am, okay?
We won't mention that.
I'm still 25 in my mind. So when I was 15, no, I'm kidding. So during that time in 2010, it was quite a life change for me. Well, actually, there were many more before that, but this was a big pivot for me, because in 2010, my women's team went through a bit of a restructuring, and we had come back from Macau at that time from CCWC. I've gone to CCWC twice with the women's team, and we've always fallen short from ever meddling or even.
And so the CCWC being?
The Club Crew World Championships, where the top clubs from each different country congregate to race all the different distances.
Right, so it's not Team Canada, it's club teams. Yeah,
all
okay.
Club teams, yeah, it's all clubs.
Sorry, yeah.
It's okay, thanks. No worries, I should have explained that. So we went and we didn't medal. We came back, the club team came back, the women's team, and then we decided that we were having a bit of a restructuring. So when restructuring happened, we decided that things had to go through a bit of change. And then at that time, coming back from Club Cruise, and also I was part of Hammerheads at that time, we had a coach, Chris Edwards, was my coach at that time. He actually did something that has never done to me ever before on the Hammerheads team. was we were at the finals on the Island Regatta, and it was the first time Hammerheads had actually a chance to podium. And we were going into our last 500 meter final, and he decided he was going to bench me. And I've never been benched before. So I went through a lot of emotions, you know, but I supported the team because team always comes first. But I remember going up to Chris and being like, okay, you know, what did I do? Why am I being benched? It's different. And he went, well, you know, you're not doing well enough. You're not hardworking enough, or, you know, you have the potential, but he's like, you're just not performing as what this team would like you to perform. So I took that back. It was hard because the team actually won third place. And I remember the celebration. It was huge. You know, we were celebrating. I was really happy on the shore, but man, did I really want to be in that race. And it was a very humbling experience to know that, you know, I could have gone to CCWC. I could have done all of that, but doesn't mean anything because the coach, you know, really didn't see much in me at that time. So it really stung me, and it really was a rude awakening, you could say.
And so you say you're happy with the team, but it stings at the same time.
You want to be able to do the best that you can for the team, right? So at that time, I'm really happy that the team won third because it's something that it was a goal for the team, and it's been a goal for us going in. But what stung me was that I had not worked hard enough to A, earn a seat, and B, be good enough to help the team win third. Like that was where my work was, and that really stung, because I'm like, it's you know, you think you're doing a lot of good things, but then somebody comes and tells you and goes, nah, not really, you're falling short, and then you feel like you failed the team. So that's what stung a lot for me, and not the fact that, you know, that I wasn't chosen, because if I don't deserve it, I don't deserve it. It hurt more for me that I didn't do enough work, or wasn't working hard enough to be in that boat to help them win.
So it was like the team did it without you.
So
what happens afterwards? What does Chris Edwards say to you? What do you say to him? And you know, working hard enough, well, wow, that's probably a tough conversation.
I think so. I know Chris has always been a very truthful coach. This is what I'm very thankful for him for. He's very blunt. He's very honest. So I think I had never really asked him what he thought of me as an athlete, or where he thought I could go to. So, I mean, I'm always up for hearing the truth. I'd rather know what was going on rather than be, you know, be told that I'm great, but I'm actually not. So I like to actually be told so I can work on something. So I had a conversation with him. I remember it was at Nationals. I'm not sure whether it was that year or the following year. And I remember saying to him, because he then, in 2011, he became the coach of the women's team. So now he's coaching both of my teams. So for me, I was like, oh, great. Now I've got him in both teams. If I don't earn my spot, I really won't get a seat. So I remember going up to him and being like, you know, so what do I need to do? Where am I going? Do I have potential in this sport? Is this something that I could, you know, reach to the highest level, like national team level, let's say? And he told me, he's like, yeah, maybe in about 5 years. And he's like, if you do the work, I say about 5 years. And I said, 5 years? Am I going to be in sport for 5 years? He's like, if you really want it, you can be in this sport for 5 years and go up to a high level. And I went, all right. You know, he's like, follow my program, follow the workouts I do. Don't skip it. Don't take days off, right? Like in terms of don't skip a workout. So I went, all right, because at that time, I think I it's not that I was skipping workouts, but the workouts were just, okay, let's just get it done, as opposed to I have a purpose and I have a plan for each workout. It was just, I'm just going to go do my workout. Yay, I finished the reps. I'm good. Move on. It was have a purpose. So that conversation really you know, turn it around for me to be like, all right, I'm just going to follow his program and see where it goes.
And so that conversation happens. Mm-hmm. And so Chris tells you it's going to be 5 years to make the national team, is what he said?
Yeah, he said it'll be 5 years for me to get to progress to that state. So
that's okay.
In my head, 2015, maybe. I was like, all right, 2015.
Okay, so that's going from being cut in 2010 and a conversation a year or two later about, okay, maybe this happens in 5 years. So what happens then? When at what point, you know, did you throw your hat in the ring and actually try out for the national team?
So from then on, you know, I worked hard on this program. I definitely saw changes in terms of physical changes, getting stronger, getting leaner. And then in 2013... we were going during these years, I mean, from 2010, 2011 to about 2013, it was a lot of rebuilding, working with Chris on both teams in Toronto. So got to know each other better. He's got to see me progress. And in 2013, he's like, hey, you know, maybe you want to throw your name in. I think I want to throw your name in the national team pool for Zagat. And I said, that was actually 2012. Sorry. So I was like, I don't know about that. And he's like, yeah, I think, you know, you should try it, see where you go. I think you have a lot of potential seeing how you've progressed. I think he saw that I had progressed a little bit faster than he thought. So the 5 years, you know, became, I know, 2-3 years. So he was like, oh, okay, maybe you've progressed a lot better. So my progress is a lot faster. So he said, can I put your name in? And I said, I don't know about that. So I thought about it. And then I went, all right, put my name in. We'll see where this goes. In 2012, we'll see where this goes. Put my name in. I went to a tryout. I remember it was at OPA at that time. It was called Outrigger. It was a clinic. It was a gym, an OPA gym here in Toronto, where they were running a national team time trials for hopefuls who want to try out. And I still remember it was at that time it was Ben Choi, Ben from NDRC, who was invigilating it at that time. And I remember going in, putting my name in, seeing all these people I've never seen before, don't know who they are, I, you know, and no one knows who I am. Everyone's like, you're from where, you're from who? I'm like, yeah, at that time it was called Outer Harbor Premier Women. I was like, yeah, I'm from the Premier Women, name is Marianne, and I'm gonna try out. And I remember my first erg score. It was a 500 meter erg time. My erg time was 2:42, and people are like pulling, I don't know, between 2:15 and 2:25. And these were at older settings. These were much heavier settings. So
for people who might not know what that means, a 2:40, 2:15, what does that mean?
Sorry, it's 2 minutes and 42 seconds over 500 meters.
Yeah.
So you're trying to have the best time to be at least selected or at least be in the selection pool. And, people and women who were trying out were pulling 2 minutes and 12 seconds, 2 minutes and 20 seconds on the paddle erg machine. So which is kind of like a rowing erg, but now it is a paddling erg. So people were pulling much faster times, about 20 seconds almost.
They're completing the same distance, 20 seconds faster.
Exactly. 20 seconds to 25 seconds faster than me. And I'm sitting there at the corner and everyone's like, yeah, that was a great try. And my head going like, I should not even be here. This is so out of my league, but okay.
That's how you felt, hey? You didn't feel like you belonged.
No, not at all. Didn't know anybody, you know, fresh out of nowhere, completing a 2:42, thinking to my head, yeah, I did a 2:42. And then hearing people doing 2:20 and you're like, oh, wasn't that great? It was 22 seconds slower than people who have potential. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, but you know, I kept my head high. I was there to represent my women's team. I was there to represent, you know, a name that Chris had put down. So I wasn't going to falter, right? I'm just going to put on a brave face and say, yeah, that's just what I did for now. That's what I've done.
And so you didn't feel like you belonged.
No.
And you're 20 seconds behind some of the fastest women in the nation.
Yeah.
What happens from there then? How do you end up, you know, multi-time member of the national team? What happens then?
So from then, you know, that was a hard year because I had to work really hard to try and get in the selection pool. And Matt Smith, who was the national team coach at that time, decided that all the women who were trying out, he'd keep in the process. So I wasn't cut, because in my mind, I thought after my first two minute and 42 second time, I'm like, okay, there's 22 seconds to make up. How am I ever going to get faster by 22 seconds? That's crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he kept everybody anyways. So I said, all right, I have less than a year, because that was in October, and the selections was happening in the following year in April, May. So I worked really hard. I went to Montreal once or twice to meet with Matt, to get to know him, to have him teach me what he wanted, adapt to a stroke that was completely different, understand how to use the machine a little better, what he's looking for. So I went through a lot of hard work to try to improve myself. And then I remember in 2013 when we had national team camp. So I made it to camp. So they had cut people along the way and he still kept me. And then we went to camp. And at camp, at that time, I think there were about 30 something odd girls, and he's selecting 24 out of the 34, 35 girls.
Yeah.
I think at that time. And I remember going to camp, meeting some really great people. It was still really daunting because I'm meeting girls from all over the country. Because at that time, when you're doing the selection process in Toronto, you're only meeting people in Toronto. You don't even know the girls from other parts of the country yet. Montreal, out in Vancouver, out in Edmonton, you know, in Calgary, there's just so many girls from all different places. So when you finally put them all in the same camp, that was really scary. That was when you're sitting there going, okay, I'm with the best of the best. And they were beasts. Like these women were women I looked up to. Like after a day of paddling with them, I'm like, oh my gosh, these women are stellar. Like how, and they were so nice. They were warm. You know, in that arena when everybody is pressured and feeling the pressure of being selected and having to perform their best, it sometimes does make women sometimes get a little bit more guarded. But what I really enjoyed from the process was actually when I met these girls, a lot of them, even though you know that they were really under a lot of stress and a lot of high pressure, they were very welcoming. They were very warm. They knew I was young. So they, you know, kept pushing me forward, really kept encouraging me. And it was really nice. It was a lot of lessons learned that week. I thought I had a good handle on it. I did my last testing. And my last test on that paddle erg machine, my time went from 2 minutes and 42 seconds to 2 minutes and 23 seconds. So I really narrowed the gap.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You chopped 22 seconds off your time over what time span?
Yeah. Over the couple of months, over six months, I narrowed that gap.
Over 6 months, you come from, I'd imagine, you know, middle, lower of the pack, mm-hmm. to you're landing right with the top ladies.
I think I was. Yeah. For me, I was hopeful that I was, because I knew that the top time at that time was 2:13, around 2:13, 2:12. So I'm like, all right, it took me 6 months to get here. That means, you know, in another 1 or 2 months, I'll probably get even a little bit faster. So I can definitely be part of the pack. So I was quite proud of where I'd been, where I'd come from. Really proud of the hard work that I've done. And then, when the selections were, when the day came for them to, you know, announce what the roster was.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that day in 2013. I was sitting in my office. It was 10 o'clock in the morning. I get a phone call from Chris and my coach, and I pick it up, and he's like, so how are you feeling? And I'm like, I'm good. What's going on? And he's like, so I gather you haven't read the email. And I'm like,
oh,
what email?
Boy. Yeah. Yeah.
And my heart kind of dropped, because I wasn't sure whether that was a good thing that he was saying that or a bad thing. I couldn't tell. So I said, he's like, all right, go read your email and then call me back. And I went, okay. So I got off the phone with him, read my email, and it told me that I had been selected as a sub. So as a substitute. So I was the 26th. I was the 26th paddler chosen as a sub. And so 24 get to go to race in Szeged in Hungary. But if you are chosen as one of the sit out subs, there's four of us. We are sort of the next in line if anything happens to the 24 girls during the time from that day on until they go to Szeged. So I just missed being on the roster by like two spots, right?
And
it was heartbreaking. I remember taking my phone and going into the bathroom of my office and crying for a good solid hour in the bathroom stall, and then calling Chris after that and sitting there going, you know, with my tears going, I have a plan. And he's like, okay. He's like, you might want to take a day to sort of digest this. I'm like, yes, I know. I get it. Okay, now let me talk. So I have a plan. I want to digest.
I love it.
Today, I am going to wallow in my sorrow, and tomorrow we are going to meet. We are going to have lunch. You are going to tell me what I need to do, because the plan to get on the next cycle starts tomorrow. There isn't enough time in the world to think about what happened today. So he's like, okay. So, all right, I'll meet you for lunch. And I'm like, great. And let's talk to Matt and figure out what I need to fix, and then let's go from there. And he's like, all right, let's do that then. So yeah, we called Matt, and Matt was really awesome in a sense that he was very encouraging to say that, you know, he saw my progress. He thought that I did really well, and I'm such a strong athlete, but I'm just missing one, like just that little bit. He's like, there's just one little thing you're missing, and you could be a lot faster, but you're not there yet. And I went, all right. And Chris, I mean, bless his heart, he's always going to be my coach. And he's like, well, I think she's there. I think she can be there. And, you know, but it is what it is. The decision was made, and that was fine. So it was, from then on, it was full on, all right, 2015. That's the next goal.
And so, what are some of the changes you made? You're making the team, but also, you know, it stings as well, because you're not going to be able to race, you know, unless something happens to one of the other teammates. So you're determined to make it the next time. Mm-hmm. And what are the changes you made then in that time period?
The first thing in that time period that, after I was told that I didn't make the team, the first thing that I did was support the team that made it. I congratulated all the girls. I was super happy for them. I, followed their journey all the way to Szeged, watched all their races, really tried to learn, really was there for them. Learning how to be a team player was number one. No matter where you sit, maybe in the boat or out of the boat, I feel like you have to always support the process. You have to always support the team that you've been trying out for. So I gained a lot of friends from that. I gained a lot of learnings from that.
People noticed.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
People noticed that I'm hungry. I really want to know what to do, how to get there, right? And these girls were really great that even though I wasn't selected, were still, you know, encouraging me and still saying, you know, there will be next time, you know, and sort of giving me tips of things I should do or I should focus on. So it was really nice of them to do that. So that was one thing, was build my network, build a great support system around me, because there's just so many women athletes that I still look up to and I will always look up to, because they're the ones that encouraged me to be there. And then that was sort of like the outward plan, and working with my women's team, right? Like being able to come back to my own local women's team and to Hammerheads and be like, you know what? I didn't make it. That was a hard thing to admit, but it was really leaning on them for the support and having these athletes encourage me and push me to reach a higher level. And then the next thing was my own personal plan. My own personal plan became I doubled my training schedule. Not that it wasn't hard enough. It was already pretty packed. Somehow I found time somewhere in between to double it, to double the amount of clinics I was doing, to double the amount of effort I was doing, to really focus on the parts that I was falling short on, which was technique, which was, you know, for every paddler, it's going to be different. I think every paddler has to acknowledge what their shortfalls are, have to acknowledge what they have to overcome and whether you can or not. And for me, Chris, you know, and I built a plan where it was things that I can overcome. I can build on them. It was just, I needed to put enough time and effort into it to be able to build on it. So, you know, being able to acknowledge, okay, you know what, this is still a possible road for me was the first step in saying, okay, I'm going to continue. Because if he came and told me, you know what, Marianne, this is it. This is probably the best you'll ever get. I'll probably be like, all right, never going to get there. But when he told me, yeah, you will get there the next time, I said, all right, so let's double my training plan. I got a dietitian, worked on my nutrition. I bought an OC. Well, it was something I really wanted to do already, but this really pushed me to be like, all right, I'm just going to get my own boat. I shared it with a friend at that time to say, because I really liked paddling. Paddling was already something that I enjoyed and something that I loved doing just on my own. Even if it wasn't for a sport, I just enjoyed it anyway. So I said, you know what? It makes sense. I'm just going to invest in it. I invested in it. I put in a lot more money into it. So because I had to put in a lot more money into it, I also took a second job. I decided to waitress and bartend just to get enough money to put me through the training and through the
time. Yeah.
So took a second job, doubled my training, did my nutrition. And then during that time for the 2 years until 2015, I also made sure that I took a lot of time to go to Montreal. I mean, I really wanted to work with Matt. I really wanted it for me. I know for me as an athlete, it takes actually a bit of time for me to understand things. Like some people, you can teach an athlete, here, this is what you do for a certain exercise here. For example, let's say squat jump. All you got to do is squat down and jump. And some athletes will get it right away. For me, sometimes it takes me at least the second try or the third try to be like, oh, now I get it. So I understand that for me, it takes me a little bit of time to adapt. So I took those 2 years to adapt to his stroke as much as I could. I worked with him. Matt has always been a great coach for me in the national team. He was super supportive. He took me in to his practices whenever there was space, and we worked on it together. I would take overnight buses to Montreal, stay with a friend just so I could get at least one session with him. Like that's how much I wanted it. That's how badly I wanted to make the team was. He told me, you know what? It was just part of my stroke that you didn't understand. I'm like, all right, I'm going to come every day and you're going to teach me until I get it.
So you really put your heart and soul into it. You doubled the number of training, the amount of training that you did. You got your own dietitian, your own OC, your own outrigger sprint canoe so you could train.
Yeah, my own outrigger canoe so I could train. Yeah, it was... I mean, if I think about all the athletes that I was going up against with, they've been in this sport a lot longer than I had. They had at least, you know, 5 to 6 years of experience of water time that I never got. So I had to make up a lot for that time if I want to make in the next cycle. And the next cycle was in Welland, was in Canada itself. Every single woman in Canada was trying out at that time. Every strong woman wanted to be on that boat because it's local, right? And you're not traveling anywhere. So, you know, it was going to be the toughest year. And I recognized it was going to be the toughest year. I'm probably going to be going up with the strongest women ever. And I had to make that jump. So if I don't double my time to make up the 5-6 years that they already have ahead of me, then I'll never see it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you really put in the work. I flashed up a photo as you were talking of an Instagram photo you have of the hardest worker in the room. And it seems to me you really took on that attitude that you really did want to be the hardest worker in the room.
I did.
You took it seriously. Yeah.
I did. I took it super seriously. I was obsessed, almost to almost a little bit too obsessed maybe at that time, but that's my personality is that I'm either all in or not. So at that time I was definitely all in. So I was really obsessed about doing well. And I remember in 2014, when you do the trials again to try and make the 2015 team, I remember doing my first paddle or time trial again, a 500 meter distance to submit my name, and using with the same settings, I had already gone down to a 2:13. So I went from trying out for my very first time at 2:42 to the end of the process at 2:23, and then trying out again in 2014 to 2:13. And at that point I was like, yeah, my name is going to be in the pool, and that's it. There's no turning back now. And I will never forget an advice that a really good paddler friend of mine, Cheryl Shannon, who's very big in the community, said to me. She's like, you know, when I told her what my time was going into this process, she's like, you're already on the team. She's like, coach doesn't know it yet. And I went, I like that. So kind of went in going, you know, with that sort of an attitude going, I'm already on the team. Coach doesn't know it yet. Got to show coach that I'm on the team. So it was, that was a real confidence booster for me. But it was nice to see how much hard work can actually pay off when you're doing it correctly. And, you know, when you've got coaches like Matt and Chris breathing down your neck and guiding you along the way, it really does come to fruition.
So, and that's phenomenal. Your story is really, it is one of perseverance. And so you just talked about the kind of the coaches in your life. And could you talk about what the effect of that coaching has been on you as a person, as an athlete?
You know, the coaching has really... Every time anybody goes, oh my gosh, Mary, you're such a, you know, you become such a good paddler. Look at you. You're so strong, blah, blah, blah. I always look at people and say, yeah, but this is made by Chris Edwards. This is made by Chris Edwards. Sure. It was my hard work, but I definitely didn't get here by myself. I think the coaching has really taught me a lot about, you know, about, leadership. It's taught me a lot about, you know, the lessons that I need to learn still. It's taught me a lot about being humble. It's taught me a lot about having to learn how to push others around me as well, right? Because I can't grow alone. So my coaches have had a huge effect on me in bringing me where I am. I'm forever grateful to them for any coach that has ever helped me. In fact, actually another person another couple of coaches that I will mention is I have Derek Schroeder, who has seen me as well from, you know, same time around as Chris Edwards. He coached me in clinics. He's another coach that has been there for me quite a lot. And he is a coach that's hard. He's blunt. He has no filter whatsoever. Like, he'll come to me and tell me, you know what, today you just really sucked. And I'm like, all right, gotcha. And he's, you know, he has no filter. And it's great because someone needs to tell me that. Someone needs to tell me, today, Marianne, your heart and soul was not in it, because I know what your heart and soul means. So it's always nice to have rude awakenings like that. And another coach that I actually went to seek out to learn about paddling technique was Larry Kane. I'm sure everybody knows our Olympian sprint canoe in Canada.
Olympic gold medalist. Yeah, very famous.
He's
awesome paddler.
I went to look for Larry and I said, you know what? I need to learn a little bit more about my catch and about my pull. And I know you coach SUP, but can you take me out anyways? And so he gave me a couple of private lessons to help me out at that time. It was very nice of him. He had some time at that time. I don't think he usually does it. But he took me out under his wing and helped me and really taught me quite a bit about my stroke. And it was nice to hear the encouragement from him where he was like, you know, I didn't know whether when you were coming in about what this was going to be about. And then I saw you take a couple of strokes. I went, oh, this girl gets paddling. She just needs a little bit of tweaking. So he really like noticed it with his eye. And I was it was very encouraging to hear, you know, an Olympic gold medalist tell me that, you know, yeah, you've got something going on. So I was like, all right, I'm on the right path, everyone. Thank God, goodness, I'm on the right path. So yeah, I was meeting these coaches have been very inspiring for me, have been very encouraging, and has really helped me push myself and everyone hopefully around me to the next level. So
you mentioned there about from the coaching that you've received, it's helped you also to become a better leader, which is interesting to me because to me, it's the idea of leaders helping others to lead others to lead others. And so what did you learn along the way? What kinds of things did you develop in yourself to become a stronger leader, to have stronger leadership so that those working with you would in turn become stronger leaders?
So going back to my club teams, going back to the Premier Women, I've been a captain of theirs, I think for a good 8 years now, on and off. I've been a captain for about 8 years. And how coaching has really pushed me, has really taught me a lot about, you know, as the word perseverance, right? How to persevere, how to really take the hard work, go through the process and produce the results that you need. And with that, I carried that a lot with me because for me, I wanted to lead the girls. I wanted to lead the women's team to being recognized. I mean, our women's team at that time, people knew about it, but no one really cared for it, I think. You know, it's not like we had any well-known paddlers, you know, and Chris would build all of us. He literally developed all of us. We weren't women who were already fantastic and came in and joined the team. We were women who just enjoyed paddling. We just wreck paddlers, right? But he built us. He built us from nothing. And we became a great powerhouse. And I carried that a lot with me because I was determined to help raise the bar for these women. I wanted to push all these girls to say, you can do it. You know, I came from being, you know, once a week paddler to this. Like Rome wasn't built in a day. So if you want it that bad, and if you have a passion for it, and if this is something you want to do, please, by all means, try your best. Work hard. Work with the coaches. I mean, they're the ones who knows best, and they will direct you to how to be the best you, how you can produce your best self. So I think with that, I learned a lot about leading in a sense of leading by example, leading by telling people my story, by saying, you know, I came from nothing too. You know, I wasn't here suddenly all in one day. It took a lot of hard work. And if you want to do it, you can. And not only that, I started in my 20s. I didn't start at the age of 13 or in high school like most people did. A lot of people I realized had started paddling when they were young. And I didn't. I had no sports. I don't really have any sports background at all. I started in my mid-20s, and I've built myself to here. Now everybody knows my age. That's lovely, Darwin. Thank you.
But I didn't ask.
It just kind of came out by itself. It's all good. It's all good. but yeah, I really want to teach. I want to inspire women. I want to inspire women paddlers out there and any other paddlers out there that if this is a passion that they have, if this is a goal that they want to achieve, be mindful of where you are, be mindful of what you have, and push forward if you can, if this is your road, right? And if this is your path, right? So it's amazing to see how our women's team went from a nobody to being, you know, Canadian national champions. You know, we won our first gold at Canadian Nationals in 2016. I think that was it. That was a world record history for this club. And it was amazing. It was a big mark for us in history. And I like to think that, You know, I helped raise the bar, and all these women around me are raising their bars and becoming stronger paddlers. Mind you, I get my ass kicked in the gym with these women, with my teammates. I'm not, you know, no one, I will never say that I am the strongest paddler. I've just succeeded a lot. I've just got a lot of successes under my belt, but I am, you know, all my teammates are just as strong as I am. You are as strong as your weakest paddler, and whatever weak means, but you are everybody, when everyone's in the boat, everyone's the same. So I'm really happy that all of my teammates have been, you know, pushing the limits, pushing my limits, and have been trying to raise each other ever since. So really proud of that, really proud of where we've come. And I'm happy to, you know, continue pushing that bar whenever I can, so that, you know, women will continue to push the limits, not just in Dragon Boat, but in their career, in their lives, in themselves, right? Like I push myself with my career. I want women out there to push themselves in the career, be able to speak up, be able to, you know, say, yeah, I am strong. I am capable. I am the hardest worker in the room. So, you know, it's important.
Well, and so for our viewers and listeners, when I reached out for a strong female role model, your name came first, and I'm seeing why. So yeah. I hope a lot of people are getting a lot out of this. So career and talk to you about your career, both as a leader as a paddler. You worked hard. You developed your leadership. You got good coaching, proper guidance. And you made lots of changes, like with more training. What are some of the things that you changed on the mental side?
Mental side, definitely. You know, I grew up in Malaysia, and I grew up from a very Asian household.
I think I can relate to that.
The Asian household is always, you do not bring shame. You do not bring, you know, you do not bring shame to the family name. You need to work hard. You shouldn't be involved in sports. If you're doing something that doesn't make you money, then you shouldn't be doing it. You know, like, if you shouldn't be spending so much time on something that doesn't really, you know, bring you any sort of success in your career. Like, you know, these are the normal things that I feel like most Asians who come up, you know, who are brought up by Asian parents will have that, you know, you'll hear that all the time. Or so I, mentally for me, it was really hard because I had to put myself out there a lot. I had to fight against, you know, what shame meant. Whenever I failed or didn't make the team, wasn't on that last race, being able to come out and say, I didn't make it, was a very hard thing for me to admit. Because, you know, in my family, it was always like, if something bad happens, you don't talk about it. You move on, or you do something to distract it. You know, okay. you don't talk about it. So my thing was, I want to talk about it because it's how I learn. It's how we grow from it. I think sometimes we don't learn enough from the things that we've failed at. We just kind of brush it under the rug and move on. For me, it was a lot of having to talk about it, being like, be real. I'm successful, but I've also failed before. You know, I'm also not the best. I have my shortfalls. I'm not perfect. And then to be able to be humble about it, about your successes, that's another thing. I try not to brag about it to people's faces. I'm proud of it. I try to find, you know, Instagram is big for me because I like, you know, I like to put content in there in hopes of motivating people about what I've done. It's by no means trying to brag about the things that I've done, but more of, this is something that has been successful for me, and I hope that you will find success too within the stories that I'm putting out. So for mentally, a lot for me is growing from that and being able to take in all the learnings that I have and being able to turn it around and produce something great out of it. So That to me was a big mental change for me. Being able to go through all of that was, you needed a lot of failures to be able to find that voice. You needed a lot of failings for sure. So shame became my mentor. Fear became my best friend from that.
Wow. That's so powerful. And so you'd also mentioned something to me that I wanted to explore as well, because it was an interesting concept and I think representative of your journey. But you tell me, you'd said the satisfaction of making the team was better than getting the gold. That is, the satisfaction of actually making the national team was in some way more rewarding than becoming a world champion. What did you mean by that?
Okay, I'm going to make sure that I explain this properly so that people will not look at me and be like, what do you mean your gold medals meant nothing? Okay, the gold medals meant a lot in a sense that, you know, we won over tough teams like China and Thailand and, you know, those they meant a lot. And the U.S., it does. But it was actually what really meant a lot to me was my journey, was my process of how I got here to win the gold medals, to be selected, to be put in the boat, to race every time. I mean, I will push myself to be the best athlete that I can be during the process, right? Like I'm building myself to be great in all distances, to be the strongest person that I can be, and up to the optimum level that my body can handle. Right. So I'm doing the best that I can be. But being selected into a team is a very hard thing. It's a very subjective thing for the coaches. It's very hard because A, they're looking for the strongest paddlers, the ones who fit in the boat well, the ones who, you know, the ones who are able to sync together, and where you sit is important, because it depends on, you know, how you paddle, your weight, your height. There's a whole bunch of factors that I won't even go into, right? So I feel like what I built myself to become was to become a paddler that people could throw me in whenever they needed, you know, a strong boat. So I was proud that I've actually pushed myself to being that, right? I'm a pretty tall girl, and I won't lie, my weight is for me, I'm always like, oh, I'm a engine paddler forever. You're never going to see me in seat one. So to be able to build myself at that optimum level, the process has made me become this athlete that, you know, you can throw me into these races and use me whenever you need me was a big thing for me, was being able to say, wow, I've come so far. And winning medals on top of it, that was the cherry on top. You know what I mean? That was great. Being able to go against the fastest teams in the world and say, yeah, we kicked your butt was great. But being able to know that in the eyes of, you know, my teammates and my coaches that I've come this far to be Marianne selected, that meant a lot to me. To know that I am of use to the team, that I can make the team faster, and if I'm in seat five that day, I'm going to be the best seat five you'll ever have on the left. You know, that I'm going to be, that's going to be me. If there was another girl that was a better seat five than me, by all means, she deserves a spot, right? Like I will never fight over it, because I always believe that team is always first and me is second. So I'm just happy that, you know, I've pushed myself to the place where people will see me and throw me in the boat and help them win a gold medal. So that to me was very important.
Going back to the actual racing then. Okay. For those of us who may not ever have the opportunity to be in a world record setting.
Oh, that race.
Event or opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
What went right that your team was able to achieve a world record? What happened?
That race was, you know, was like 40. I used to remember the number. It's like 45 seconds of good pain. But I think, you know, I have matrix moments where things slow down and I remember every part of that race. I remember us going there and in the finals, and we raced up to the we went up to the start line, and we were going back and forth in and out of the chute because they couldn't line us up properly.
So the chute is kind of, maybe you can describe what that is. Yeah.
Yeah. So the chute is, so at the starting line, we all have this mechanical sort of like a block that's in front of each of the dragon boats to keep all of our boats in line. And what you have to do is to put the dragon head in that little, like, I guess a holder. You have to put your head, put the dragon boat, line it up in the holder. And then when they say go, the holder actually falls into the water, and then you just blast off, right? So it keeps all the boats in line. And that day, for some reason, we just weren't, it was windy, we were just not lining up properly in terms of we were out of the holder, in the holder, far away from the holder. And all I remember that day was, it was Canada, back up, Canada, move forward, Canada, go fly. And in my head, I was like, oh my gosh, can we get this over and done with? Because all of us, our adrenaline is, our heartbeat is all the way up to
You're ready to go? Yeah.
And I'm ready to go. I'm doing Xena warrior cries about time, going like, can we go yet? And we needed to have the best race ever. That's our mentality always, is that we want to feel good. We know it's going to be fast. We've practiced this. Our stroke rate is going to go somewhere beyond 100 strokes a minute. It's going to be insane. So we might as well just get it over with. It's going to be a lot of pain. But that day, I remember we were just going in and out, and we were, and finally, when I think that was alignment, and she went, and she was like, teams, we have alignment. I remember us going, guys, this is it. And I sit in the middle of the boat, and the gun goes off, and then we start. And that start was so explosive. It's like everybody had the paddles in just at the right time and pulled at the right time. And it felt like one surge going forward. And I went, oh, we're going for it. Oh, we're going. This is going to hurt. In my head, I remember that. This is going to hurt. And we went for it. And I remember going down that line. And Alex, who's our steers person, was yelling at us, going like, come on, girls. You got to feel the pain. You got to hurt. And I remember at the 100-meter line when she was like, guys, we got to do a finish. I remember I was sitting around some of my teammates, and I remember there's a girl, Jackie and Noelana from Edmonton, Jackie from Vancouver. We have this thing going on where we say that we've on the paddle erg machine, we've actually tested to see how much watts we can produce.
Yep.
The three of us have always said that the best watts we can maybe produce is 300 watts and up, which is something that all three of us have achieved. I remember at that line, I was like, Jackie, Nolana, 300 watts. And I remember them screaming with me, and we blasted through the finish line. And when we finished, there was so much pain. I remember I fell down into my seat. Everyone was dying, but it felt so good.
Because
when we had that finish, I didn't think that we could go any. I'm like, okay, we're going. My arms are going to fall off. We're going at, God knows, 120 strokes a minute. I didn't think there was going to be another gear, but there was another gear, and we went. And that finish was beautiful. And I remember looking over, and everyone was like, yeah, it's yours. But we didn't know that we broke a world record at that time. We just knew that it was really good and that we beat, you know, USA, and we beat China. We beat everyone around us. So we were just happy about that. But when we got off and we found out what our time was, and we saw that we had, you know, actually broken a world record, that was amazing. That was an amazing feeling. So it's always about, so for me, the memory of it wasn't just winning the gold medal and breaking the world record. It was actually the race itself. I always remember my races because of how good it felt. If it felt good, it'll stay in my memory for a very long time. And that was one of the races that felt super good. I don't, usually 200 meters, it happens so fast. I usually, you know, usually turn around and go like, what happened? Where did we go? 200 meters, what happened? 40 seconds of what? So, you know, I usually don't remember because it was so quick, but this one, for some reason, really stayed with me. So.
And so there's an, to me, this is, and that's crazy. Like, man, I'm sweating and just listening to your story. And one of my windows just died as you were telling the story. So it's the power of the moment, but you're in pain and you're communicating with your teammates. And yet at the beginning, I think you said it was like everything slowed down. So you're feeling the incredible energy, and yet time is slowing down for you.
Yeah.
What does that feel like?
You know, it's actually something I discussed with one of my teammates on the Premier Women when I was telling her how when you've done a lot of races, when you've paddled so much and can feel water and feel the boat as much as, because you've done it so many times, there comes a time when, for some reason, for me now, there are times when I can actually have these moments in a race when I'm breathless, but I can still feel everything. Like I know what's going on. I know who is doing what. I know whether our timing is on or it's off. I know if our stroke rate is not at the level that it should be. Like, it's really weird that I've been so conditioned to knowing what good races feel like that I can dissect it now and be able to be in the moment of each part of the race. It's quite interesting. The longer races are the ones that you can really dissect it. Like every single turn in a 2K, you know where you're at, what's the rate, what it should be. You know, you can feel who's dying, engine, pace. You know the pace is too slow. Back needs to push more. Like, I think for me, being able to feel that has been my next level of understanding a race, of really being in it. I don't know how to explain it. It's really one of those things where I'm so aware and so tuned to, okay, what we got to do next, that everything slows down around me, time slows down. I've managed to dissect it, and as a person that's been pretty vocal, so there's the one thing that Chris has allowed me to do in my years of being a captain and being on the boat for a long time is he's allowed me to be a voice, to sometimes yell for pickups when we need it or say encouraging things. And it's one of my things that I enjoy doing because I can read it, I can feel it, and it encourages people, especially in the 2K. Especially in the 2K in your third
2K, that being a 2 kilometer race.
2 kilometer race where it's split into 400-500 meter distances.
With turns in between.
With turns in between. Your third leg is usually, that's between the 1,000-meter mark to the 1,500-meter mark. That's usually the hardest leg because that's the leg where your brain is saying, I've had enough. I'm going to stop now. I am not able to. And you've got to switch that to, I've already done 1,000 meters. I only have another 1,000 meters left. Don't waste all the effort that you've made in the last 1,000 meters. Keep going. So, you know, being able to yell at, you know, being able to, you know, time it to understand who is not doing what and being able to encourage the girls to keep pushing was something that I've sort of learned with my women's team. So I try not to speak a lot in the boat, but when there comes a time when you need it and you know that word or that sentence is going to make a difference, I just instinctively do it because it's just something that you do. It's kind of like the steers person knowing exactly when to make the calls. It's pretty much the same thing.
So concept in psychology, in sports psychology, where the body and the person and the human, the mind end up in a state of perfect efficiency, kind of. Sometimes it's called, you know, it's been called the zone or flow. And it sounds like maybe that's the zone you entered during that race.
I'm always in the zone.
What's that?
I'm always in the zone.
You're always in the zone? How does a person get into the zone? Whether sport or whatever.
I think my coach And my husband will tell you that what gets me in the zone is my own anxiety. It's the anxiousness of, for me, it's I am so anxious to make sure everything is perfect or is going to go well that I am just highly focused into it. It's just my heart rate goes to 120 and 130 without me even doing anything. I'll sit there and my heartbeat's going up high. My adrenaline is rising without me doing anything.
It literally goes to 120, 130.
Yeah. I've had moments before testing where I'll sit down and Chris will be like, can you please check your heart rate right now? And I'll check my heart rate. And I'm like, I'm going at 125. He's like, lie down. You're not going in another 10 minutes. Lie down. And I'm like, all right. And take deep breaths. It's just my own mental sort of like in a bit of anxiety maybe. And then from then on, I'm just in the zone. I'm completely focused. And I know that the moment the gun goes off, you know, when I'm supposed to start a fit test or I'm supposed to start a race, from the first stroke, I know whether it's going to be a good one or not. It's just based on how I feel. Mentally, I'm always prepared. Physically is making sure that physically I'm prepared as well. That, you know, everything's aligned from my catch to my pull to my exit. Everything's got to be aligned. My body's got to be in the rhythm. Everything has to be in rhythm. So how I prepare myself to be in the zone is just I can't even explain it anymore. It just becomes natural. I just know I'm starting to be in the zone when my heart rate's at 130 beats a minute and I'm not doing anything yet.
Right on. Man, this has been so much fun and so informative. So, you know, hopefully, you know, maybe we'll have another chance to talk again sometime.
For sure.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Marianne Tai. You can find her on Instagram at Marianne Tai. Thank you all so much for listening and watching. If you want to know more about this topic or others, go to my website, evolutionofleaders.com. Make sure you get 1% better today and tune in again on another show of the Evolution of Leaders. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And thank you, Marianne Tai.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this interview. Marianne clearly has a very high self-awareness. She's highly coachable. I love how she doubled the effort she was doing and getting a second job just to be able to afford it all. It was great to hear how one of the top teams in the world operates. They're warm and friendly, even to their fellow teammates that are trying out against them, which is pretty awesome. If you want to learn more about leadership, I'll be hosting a virtual conference with multiple dates throughout 2020 and 2021. With 72-hour viewing access, starring John Maxwell, Kat Cole, Steve Harvey, Alan Mulally, and Craig Rochelle. A great lineup. Go to evolutionofleaders.com/live-to-lead. That's evolutionofleaders.com/live-to-lead, L-I-V-E, the number 2, L-E-A-D. Please like and share if you enjoyed this. Thank you so much.